Welcome to the Creative Curmudgeon.
Well, so, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Well, hold on. I'm talking to the general audience. I'm so sorry I didn't make that clear yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
But welcome to you as well, Sunny K,
well, thanks.
My
Happy
today's
to be here.
guest. Sunny is the vocalist for such bands as Angel Hair, the VSS, Subpoena the Past, and Dear Future. Also, for over a decade, ran Gold Standard Laboratories, or GSL for short, a record label that had a big impact on me as a youngster. Is a visual artist, has made a lot of album art for a lot of bands, as well as non-band related art. And we were going to discuss all of these things. So, Sunny, thank you for joining me today.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
You currently live in Arkansas, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah, in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
I'm curious what brought you there.
Well, I was sort of lured out here about coming up on 7 years ago. I had a friend, let me back up, my band Year Future had toured through this part of the country in 2006 and actually had played here. And that was the first time I'd ever even heard of Hot Springs, and it was kind of you know, curious place, but you know, didn't really impact me much, that much more than that. But I did at the time, that is, and I did become friendly with a band who lived here at the time called Attractive and Popular, and wound up putting out a record for them, and keeping in touch with the people from the band after they broke up. And you know, to cut a long story short, one of them wound up calling me one day and saying, there's this position opening up here at this arts nonprofit that that I was, you know, already aware of and had, you know, some minimal prior experience with, but nothing significant. And the founder and director was had stepped down, and they were looking for somebody to kind of lead the charge, I guess you could say. So eventually I was eventually I moved here and did take over. I was about like I said, just coming up on about 7 years ago.
I'm curious what the artistic, musical, etc. community is like there. There was a documentary that I watched years ago. Probably should have looked up the name of it, but it was specifically about the punk scene in Little Rock, and they had Ian MacKay on it, and he was talking about how just like these kids of Little Rock were just like out of their minds, and how unexpected that was. What is the experience been like for you?
Well, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the thing you're talking about is called Towncraft.
Okay.
And there was a label, File 13, that was sort of loosely, that was based in Little Rock for a time in the 90s and then moved to other places. It was run by different people. But my own personal first experiences, I guess you could say, with Arkansas and Little Rock were in the early 90s, becoming aware of that scene going on here and just what a sort of hot spot at the time it was. And there was a lot of like sort of, you know, not major cities that were really popping off at the time. And Little Rock and Rapid City, Arkansas, Rapid City, South Dakota were two of them that were. I lived in Boulder, Colorado, and it was you know, it seemed like every band that came through on tour was talking about one of those two places or excited about, you know, heading there or just having come from there or something. And Rapid City was close enough to us where we could go up there and see for ourselves and sort of become part of that whole thing. But Little Rock was a little far removed. And then once I did get into a band that was touring and stuff, I actually had a hard time landing a show in Little Rock for years. Angel Hair actually... even though we were friendly with Chino Horde, who I think were probably on tour, and I think that may have been the problem, but we wound up just having to kind of pass it over, which was, you know, in hindsight, kind of unfortunate. But I guess excuse me, the music scene here is kind of like so many other places. I think grown and shrunk depending on like generations of people going away to college or that kind of thing. And Hot Springs is about an hour southwest of Little Rock, and it's kind of more of a destination place, more of a tourist place. And it doesn't, while it has a huge turnover of people coming here, it kind of the city itself doesn't really cater to young people all that much. And so the music scene here in Hot Springs specifically has kind of same kind of thing as Little Rock. It's had moments of being really visible and active and pulling in, potentially hundreds of people, and then it's had gone through phases of being virtually non-existent.
Do you feel
And
like, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. What were you gonna say?
oh no, go ahead.
Do you feel like living in a place that's not Los Angeles or New York or whatnot, like in this day and age, do you think, because, there's definitely obviously been times where people felt like they had to go to like one of a handful of like meccas or whatever in order to network or whatever.
Yes.
But now we have the World Wide Web and all of this technological what have you, and do you feel like it matters anymore?
I think to some degree it does. I don't think anything really replaces one-on-one contact with a human being. But having said that, I think that the sort of center points for this kind of activity are a little more diverse now. I don't think it's as critical to be in, New York or LA or whatever to establish yourself or, network with other people or that kind of thing. I think like you said, the web is a big part of that now. But also there's, people have fled those places for various reasons, and, the middle of the country is gradually becoming more, I guess you could say, I don't know, sophisticated. I don't, maybe that's not the right word, but the ability to imagine like probably being in somewhere like Austin or Nashville. I mean, those have always been major places for this stuff, but I think probably now more than ever before, people there are maybe not required to travel to the coasts as much to do business. I think maybe the business comes to them. You know what I mean? And I think that's, certainly the same can't be said for here, but there's other cities around here that seem like they are on that path. I mean, Tulsa, for example, certainly Kansas City and Memphis is, Memphis has never not been major music place, and it's like there's it I don't know, there seems to be more money pouring into all these places now to support the culture of music and other entertainment that I think is characteristic of people leaving the major places where those have been relevant in the past.
That makes sense. So I wanted to start at the beginning. You
Sure.
becoming a creative sort of person. Like where did that stem from?
Well, I was as a child, I was, I think, naturally gravitated towards drawing and stuff. And was my parents noticed that and encouraged that in me. And although it was never particularly regimented or forced on me or anything like that, it was certainly my own my own drive or willingness kind of instigating it. But I was they were they definitely took an active role in art opportunities outside of school. Think like, drawing workshops on weekends and that kind of thing. And yeah, I guess that's kind of where it began. Neither of my parents are visual artists, but having said that, my mom is kind of a little bit of a jack of all trades, and she was my earliest sort of inspiration for graphic design awareness, I guess you could say. She would kind of make things at home were, just projects for her for fun, but they really resonated with me and got me thinking about things graphically, I think, early on. And I remember being 9 or 10 years old, and people asked me what I want to be when I grow up, and I would say I wanted to do graphics, but I didn't even really understand what that meant. And I knew the word graphic in terms of like graphic violence, and I think I was like in my 20s when I finally came to understanding of the actual like what the word actually means in regards to visual art. It was it kind of was just this vague thing for me for such a long time. But I was really once I got into high school, I was largely distracted by music, and my parents' marriage was kind of dissolving, and so I kind of just school kind of with I don't know at the time at school kind of became secondary, and it had never really been secondary for me before in my life. I'd always been a straight A student, and then by the 11th grade, I was kind of largely tuning out. But the classes that did hold my attention were things like airbrushing, working with an airbrush in this sort of like all-purpose, I don't even remember what the class was called, but an art class that just sort of sped through introductions to all different kinds of mediums in a semester, and that really captured my imagination and sort of didn't open up any door. It kind of got started me on my path, I guess you could say, in a more hands-on sense. And
Right.
soon after high school, I was able to find a job at a silk screening shop, and then from that point on, it was kind of I don't know, thinking about things more less experimentally and just more in terms of like what was available to me, literally like on a daily basis, like what the tools that I could use, at work.
Right, you had like a lot more access, and so that opened up a lot more doors. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, this was pre-computers and stuff, so it was
Sure.
like, Letraset lettering, clip, old kinds of stock clip art and stuff that was distributed in these kind of like catalog forms, and yeah, all kinds of things that people, I don't know, I don't think they really exist in the real world anymore. They've been replaced by, more convenient digital versions.
Right. I wanted to ask whether the, and this goes for both you drawing, it goes for you screaming. Was there, slash, is there more of the mindset of you making things as sort of a documentation? Your experience, something to like leave behind, some sort of expression of what's going on in the Sunny K noggin versus like the, because I've been thinking more about just like the physical sensations of things, like how just screaming in and of itself, or even just
Right.
like I have a lot of students that draw just like nonstop as sort of a stimming sort of activity or whatnot, and I'm curious, both then and now, which one takes more precedent? Or is there another thing?
Well, That's a fascinating question, and I find it like really relevant to my own experience because I have always, it took me years to embrace the word artist, and even in art school, I would cringe when other students would call themselves that because I feel like it's I felt at the time like it was something that you kind of needed to earn. I had a lot of baggage about art when I came when it came time to go to college school for it, you know, university level. I have always admired and sort of envied people who just draw all day long, fill notebook after notebook of stuff. In the same way that I've had musician friends who just like get out of bed in the morning and pick up a guitar and start strumming it. Neither one of those are things that I particularly relate to very much, and I have gone through a lot of in the when it comes to the sketchbook part of that, to keeping a drawing journal or just drawing purposefully all the time. I've gone through short bursts of that all my life, but it's never been something consistent. And it's something that I've actually gone through a lot of reckoning with over myself, like and I just, you know, ultimately I've come to the realization that like I get up every morning and I do the thing that is inspiring me most that day, and sometimes that's drawing or painting, sometimes it's putting on an event, sometimes it's putting out a record or you know whatever, and or sitting down at the computer to make you know a digital thing that satisfies me in a sort of much more immediate way than it ever would doing it on sitting down at a table and finding the paper equivalents, you know what I mean? And so to try and answer your question, I find fulfillment in the project at hand always, and I'm always looking to do things artistically, even if it is something like just putting on an event or whatever, which is a lot of what I do here at my job. But I will say as I've gotten older, and I've become acutely aware of it living here and doing a job that's creative but also largely kind of admin, and it just sucks up a huge amount of time. I really long to be making art that I am, you know, that I have a hard time finding the time to do. And I feel way more I feel a much more focus a much clearer fo focus and sense of direction and purpose when I do sit down to do, you know, to do art, quote unquote, now than I would have even like 10 years ago. I feel like the time that I'm affording myself to actually do these things is so limited that I want to make every minute really count. And I've also just suffered from hang-ups about my art, about making art, about the method, the medium, the subject matter, whatever, like my whole life. And I'm finally, I think, just coming to a point where I'm able to kind of just put a lot of that aside and just find joy in it. And also, there's a whole bunch of things I want to try and get to that I haven't been able to. Like, you know, sounds corny, but I would love to. I haven't attempted working in wood since I think shop class in 7th grade. And thanks to social media, I'm constantly seeing videos of people working in wood that I'm just like really inspired by, and want to try and get that out of my system.
That's amazing. It seems like a lot of work, but that would be super awesome.
Yeah,
A
I mean,
lot of
you
work for me. Like I mainly do, you know, music on my computer and writing and whatnot, just because that takes like the least amount of materials, and I'm a deeply lazy person. So like that's much easier for me than some of these extravagant projects people can work on. I envy that. But
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, unrelated to creativity, like since you're so busy with admin or your creative admin job, what do you do non-creatively just to relax?
Well, I travel as often as I can. That's my number one. And having said that, I don't get to do that quite as often as I'd like. But my partner Jennifer and I both really value that experience and getting away together. And so we certainly prioritize that over everything else. Having said that, we just became owners of a pair of very rambunctious dogs about 5 months ago, and they have really taken over our life in a good way. They are something that now it's like having children overnight, basically, and they require a whole bunch of attention and energy directed towards them and out of them every day. And so that's kind of opened up this new routine of hiking and going to the park and stuff here that I wasn't that routine with before. And living in Hot Springs is like couldn't really be you couldn't ask for a more a beautiful or suitable place for that kind of thing. There's a, I mean we're literally in the middle of a national park, so
That's awesome.
It's incredible. Yeah.
What kind of dog do you have?
They are both Australian Shepherd mixes. They are potentially related to one another. We're not really sure. They came from a place here in Arkansas that we visited and were kind of alarmed by, and wound up committing to a much bigger handful than we had intended. But it was we felt good about relieving some of the distress that we were this yeah it was just a not an ideal situation. And so we had the opportunity to get a couple of animals out of there, and it was great. And we didn't really intend on keeping two, but once you create that little unit, it's hard to break it up. And the longer we had them both, it was, the idea of splitting them up just became unthinkable. So now we have two dogs, and it's a little bit of a circus, but that's okay. They're still really young, and they'll I'm told they'll settle down. And Jen's doing everything she can to be a serious dog trainer with them, and I'm her support.
What are your dogs' names?
Our dogs are Murray and Lola.
Did you name them?
Murray came named, and Lola was originally named Rose. She's a little bit of a reddish brown color, but she didn't seem like a rose to us. Plus, Murray and Rose just sounds like a, retired accountant and his wife. So we just thought we'd modernize it a little bit with Lola.
I have a dog that my partner brought when she moved in, and I've become extremely close to that dog. But I haven't actually been in the process of like naming the dog. I had a child when I was 22, and me and my child's mother, decided on a name together, came to a compromise. But I also at that young of an age, I don't even know that I realized like what a big decision that even was. And I don't know, naming a dog just seems like an exorbitant amount of stress. I don't know how much work you put into it, but
Yes, I mean probably much less than we should, but her name Lola just sort of sprung out at us sort of almost immediately. She just it just seems like a Lola.
that's probably for the best, the way that sometimes I hear parents say like they looked at their baby and they just knew like Josh or
Right.
whatever.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten to music or collaging really yet, and we're like 24 minutes in, and that's totally cool, but I guess I should probably get that started now.
Sure.
So I've never really been able to figure out how screaming works in a band. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have done it a little bit, like in spurts, but certainly not like a set's worth of screaming. And my partner is a vocal teacher, and she's tried explaining it to me, and I still can't quite grasp it. But I'm curious how you developed your screaming voice.
That's an interesting question. How it de I don't know that it did develop. I think I was in I had been in a band. I had been in a couple bands, my late teens and early 20s that I was trying to figure out what I was doing and who I was. I wasn't a musician really. I never even tried to be a singer. And we also musically that weren't what she necessarily would call hardcore bands, I don't think. But by the time Angel Hair was coming together, I sort of that was the third band I was in. And I guess by that point I sort of had a few years experience had come to understand my own strengths and weaknesses, I think. And also in that moment was feeling a real urgent pull towards making much more aggressive and intense music than the bands I had been in before had been doing. And all it just seemed like all my peers, I guess you could call them, the people that I was being influenced by and who meant the most to me, not all of them, many of them were screamers, I guess you could say. Even though Fugazi had obviously broken that mold and moved on and been doing other things, like Minor Threat still bloomed large in my mind. Frankly, I also felt at the time, to be totally honest with you, I felt like screaming was something I could do with more conviction I guess satisfaction or for myself and maybe others, like than attempting singing. I didn't know how to sing, and I had been in a band before Angel Hair called Savalas. We had made a couple of records, and we were very into DC sounding bands and what have you, and so the emphasis wasn't on aggression necessarily, or not that the not that not it, not that it was an Angel Hair. It's just that aggression was was just a the it's hard to verbalize, but the aggressive part of our kind of hardcore wasn't based in actual aggression. You know what I mean? It was rooted in just having to get that energy out. I think I've lost the plot with your question anyway, but I think Angel Hair just was the screaming, the vocal delivery was intended to punctuate the music. Of course, I think most singers would say the same thing. But it wasn't something I didn't give a lot of thought to it. It just felt right in the moment. And I can tell you that the older you get, doing that kind of a performance gets more and more difficult. I
Yeah,
mean, it
no, I'm
wasn't that
sure.
easy when I was 22.
Yeah.
We went on the road for 6 weeks in the summer of '94, playing every day, and it got hotter and more humid as we went on, to the point where we played in Georgetown at a place there where the windows were literally nailed shut because of the noise complaints from the neighbors. And there's it was I that's the show. That's the I constantly go back to that in my mind, is the show that I blacked out at. I mean, I've never blacked out in my life that
Jesus.
I'm aware of, except for there. And that's I don't know, that was that that wouldn't have happened if I had been drinking water and singing. But
That's wild. Has that happened more than once?
no, I mean, for me personally, no, that's the only time that ever happened. And it didn't last very long, but I think I just was, I don't know, heat exhaustion or what, but I just it was difficult to breathe. But
Jesus. Well, what do you do to, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, what do you do to, like, kind of, when you're belting it out, but like also kind of preserving yourself, like how does that kind of work in your head?
well, that's a good question. I mean, it's been a long time since I've played live in that, at least an entire whole show. A couple of summers ago, I traveled to San Diego and was part of a memorial show for a friend who had passed there, and sang a few songs with a band with some friends.
My condolences, by the way. I'm assuming I know who you're talking about, and I
No,
my
it was actually somebody else. It wasn't Gabe.
okay.
I wasn't able to go to Gabe's memorial, but ironically, this was just a few months later in the same place for the same reason.
Well, my condolences regardless. I'm sorry for your
Thank you,
loss. Yeah.
thank you. Anyway, my point is that just doing three or four songs with this band like really put me to the test. And to answer your question, I don't know. I think the only way to do that well at my age and or probably really any other is to be you know is to really like make the performance the smallest part of your exercise routine, not the only part of it. You know what I mean? I would imagine that guys in their 50s and older, playing in bands and staying in shape, like they're spending a lot of time in the gym to make that happen. And I respect that, and I admire that
Yeah, no, I would
perseverance.
imagine Justin Pearson's been on this podcast, and like watching like video of him now, where it's like he looks like he's on fast forward, and then like also just like screaming, and he kind of seems like a vampire, in the way that he looks. It's like how the like what I know that he does yoga, but it's like, dude, how the fuck do you does this like I could never do that at any age, is just flail around like that and then belt that out, yeah.
He's a unique circumstance though, because I think he's been consistently in a band always, and it's just that alone I think keeps you in shape. I mean, he's an incredibly healthy guy too. Maybe one of the healthiest people I know in punk music, actually. I know he does yoga. That's wild because most people do yoga to stay in shape. I think he just does yoga just to kind of fill in the spots between tours. He's just an athlete. To me, he's an athletic person. He probably wouldn't say that, but he feels that way to me.
No, absolutely. I wanted to ask you about your lyric writing in the past. I
Sure.
was very fascinated when I, because I got into, the VSS, the Locust, the original Camera Obscura, which, by the way, I think that's a fucking tragedy that like another Camera Obscura started. And that when you look up that band, like that's all that comes up is that band from like Scotland or whatever that does like twee pop or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think that's a damn shame. But
Well, I heard a rumor that the Camera Obscura that you like might be getting some of their music reissued, so maybe that'll go some way to fix that.
that's wonderful. That's wonderful news. But anyway, the lyric writing seemed very like cut up, and I was always fascinated by VSS lyrics. One of them that comes off the top of my head is like, I drink a sky full of UFOs and drive, where I was just like mesmerized by that lyric, but I to this day have no idea what it could possibly mean. But like the way that the lyrics, I'm just kind of curious like how you would write those lyrics. Like, would you have topics in mind going into it? Was it cut up? Like, how did that work for you?
Yeah, I almost always had a topic in mind. Sometimes it would take a long time to find a topic. That was the thing I struggled with as a so-called writer. Writing lyrics the like it took me kind of years to really tap into the the part of my personality that had anything really that it felt like it had anything solid to say. Prior to that, I kind of was always sort of like feeling around in the dark, and my real early attempts at lyric writing, I think, were either outright theft or just generic cliche dumb stuff. When it came to Angel Hair, and the VSS, those bands coincided with a time in my life where I was feeling, I was kind of just like experiencing the real freedom of being able to, I mean, we were on tour all the time, so we felt free. It wasn't as though we felt constricted. We were like kids in America going to college. We weren't, life was good.
Sure.
But I also, I was really just, I was in love with someone at the time who was a hugely creative presence herself, and just had a big influence on me and a huge presence in my life, and a lot of it is to do with us and the things that we would the two of us would be into together, and things we would go off and do sort of outside of the band. Anything that's kind of feels like vaguely emotional or relationship oriented is probably to do with her. And whereas a lot of the other stuff was more, I guess, particularly in Angel Hair, just kind of like, observations on the punk scene or whatever. But to answer your question, like there generally always was a topic or a loose goal in mind, as far as what they were about. They weren't like, when you say cut up, they weren't. I never literally did that. They are a bit, I guess, maybe stream of consciousness feeling. But also I was, my big influences did weren't coming from punk and hardcore. Like, I was really into Bauhaus at the time. Obviously we did that cover, and I loved Nick Cave's lyrics in The Birthday Party, and those were huge for me for years. Like, that was I really loved his ability to, like, this his lyrics were so
Like abstract.
vivid visually. Yes, but yeah, exactly. But also abstract, all over the map. Completely unpredictable, and I don't know, just a unique perspective on life. I don't know how else to say it, really. And I really tried to absorb that and respond to that in my own way, I guess. And also, I always, English post-punk music was always where my heart was. You know what I mean? And I couldn't really. Until the VSS, I guess, especially in Angel Hair, there wasn't really an avenue necessarily to bring that music into our sound. But having said that, a lot of us love that music. Our guitar player Josh loved the Cult, I guess in our each in our own little way, we maybe brought some elements of that to the sound, but
Never checked out the Cult for some reason. Like I've just heard their name like all over the place, but for every reason I've never delved into them.
Okay. Well, they're these days it's a mixed bag. They've been around for 40 years, and the singer joined the Doors.
Oh, that's right.
There's been a lot of weirdness, but the Cult at its core, and in the beginning, they started out as what would now be called a goth band. And went through some phases. So they were the Southern Death Cult, then the Death Cult, then the Cult, and they put out records all along the way under all those different names. And you see them kind of develop from kind of stark, punky sound into what would, then Rick Rubin eventually gets his hands on them, and they just become these like rock, become like AC/DC. And but their early few records, as the Cult, were very atmospheric, very guitar oriented, but not chugga chugga. They're kind of
Right.
like huge inspiration from like Susie and the Banshees and
Right.
Joy Division and those kind of Echo and the Bunnymen of the era. It's like some of their best stuff that came out. I still feel that way.
You have a favorite
And he
band?
does have a great voice, and he does sound like Jim Morrison, but like whatever. He's got a great voice of his own. And now, tip my hat to them. I give them credit for persevering. I don't think they've ever really actually broken up.
Yeah, I saw they were on tour with Public Enemy at some point in the last like 10 years or something, which I like the Public Enemy still doing that, just like touring with like really unrelated acts.
I know what you mean. Gosh, I saw Public Enemy play at. I saw Public Enemy. I've loved Public Enemy since I was 16, 17, and saw them play in 1991, and was, I loved it.
That's
Although I didn't think
amazing.
the sound wasn't that great, but I still loved seeing them. And then I saw them in their mid, I don't know, around 2015 or 16, something like that. I saw them play at in Austin, South by Southwest, in this park, to like 10,000 people or something, and it was at the peak of Flavor Flav's TV stardom,
Oh, right.
and he kind of like commandeered the show, which was terrible, and the whole thing just became this weird. It just kind of devolved. It wasn't like that. It wasn't the Public Enemy that we all love, and so knowing that Chuck's kind of, I think, taking the reins back is kind of relieving. And I feel the same way. I wish Terminator X was still in Public Enemy, because I feel like
Yeah.
he was a big part of the soul of the group. But the fact they're still doing it is amazing. And Chuck D is like the real deal.
Oh, absolutely.
I love that guy.
I love that he's influenced by like Marv Albert and like sportscasters. I think that's fascinating.
Exactly. I mean, he's one of a kind, and the lyrics are amazing. That I still listen to It Takes a Nation of Millions like probably monthly.
That's awesome.
It's my top five favorite records of all time, hands down.
What I was gonna ask a minute ago, like what your favorite band was. I'm also curious what your favorite album is, if you have one. I don't know that I have one that like stands out, because just like how do you answer that? But I was just curious if something came to mind for you.
There is no one thing. I loved Echo and the Bunnymen when I was a kid, and the first 4 or 5 years of their existence is music I still, I actually don't listen to much of it anymore, but I still have almost like religious veneration for it, and I still actually do collect those records. Like if there's a weird foreign pressing of a single that I don't have that I find, I will grab it.
No.
But having said that, I wouldn't even say that any one of their records is my favorite record, or that they're necessarily my favorite band. I love the Beatles, and that's not a unique sentiment, I know, but I think that they're as universal as they are for a reason.
Yeah, of
And I
course.
think they're one of the most consistent bands ever.
Which Beatle would you say is your Beatle?
That's tough. It's changed throughout my life, but I think at gunpoint, I would say George.
George? Yeah, I think I might be at the George phase in my life as well.
I admire them all for different reasons, and enjoy all their contributions to it. George is the one who constantly surprises me, and I feel has a kind of depth to his contributions that, I'm just constantly surprised by him.
Yeah, no, I even mean just like, personally. Like I used to think John was more the guy, and that was during my like, I'm a tortured thinking man sort of like
Right.
phase in life, and like John is like, I identify with him. I feel like George, at this point where I'm just like, I feel more like I want to be left alone
Yeah, I can
and just
relate
like
to
do my
that.
thing. Plus
Yeah.
I would love to get to that Zen state of eventually where like if Eric Clapton stole my wife, I would still be
Just
willing
like,
to be the best man at his wedding. Like that's
yeah.
unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Yeah, George went deep on the mysticism stuff, and I think that's there's something curious I don't know, engaging about that. The others are all cool in their own way. They all, are humans who've done regrettable things and had bad haircuts, all of them.
Right.
Worn silly clothes and then got back together and done things that were just even more regrettable, I think. But I hear you. I mean, John's attitude always, there's just something about his spirit that's always appealing.
Sure.
And then you hear yet another story about something that he did to somebody, and you're just like, oh well, maybe he wasn't the nicest person in the world after all, but
Right.
what are you gonna do? I think for nice points, probably Ringo
Yeah, Ringo doesn't.
wins.
I've never heard anyone say anything bad about Ringo. I could be
No,
wrong, but
exactly.
like he just wants to hang out, and I think that's cool
Exactly.
too.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about collaging a little bit. The
Sure.
one that I was going to talk about specifically was the Sonoran Sandman one.
Oh, good.
And
It makes me happy that you said that, because you asked me to think about one, and I did, and I was like, you asked me to think about one from the book, and that didn't make it into the book. It went that was but that was made while the book was going to press, and I've always regretted not being able to get it in there, because it's that was kind of one of the last things I completed before I moved here and took this job, and that whole sort of phase for me sort of hit the brakes largely. And so good. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
Oh
glad
no,
you
you're
chose
good.
that.
I know that there's a YouTube video that's on your website on sunnyk.com. So if anyone's listening to this and then wanted to watch that video as well, maybe that would be helpful. It's definitely helpful for me to be able to like look at something and then like kind of hear you talk about it a little bit, because video is in fast motion. You're putting a bunch of stuff on top of each other, and I was just curious with that or with anything else. Like you sit down, and do you have that already in mind, or do you get to that eventually from fucking around? Like how does that work?
I when I started doing the digital collage stuff, 15 or so years ago, 20, coming up on 20 years ago, it was largely the way you would work with cutting up a magazine, right? I would find an image somewhere, cut it out from its background, and then attach it to something else, and sort of start to assemble this other structure, right, based upon all these individual images. But at some point around the time, a few years into doing the digital collage, I did an image of a green man which is a concept in popular imagery from Europe going back thousands of years, right? It's like the spirit of nature kind of thing. And the way I approached doing that one just sort of was different. I decided to try and really construct something that was more about the texture overall than the simple loose association of things, and trying to create a surrealistic dialogue or any kind of commentary. It was more about just it was just at the beginning, just kind of testing myself to see what would happen. But about halfway through making this thing, I felt like it really was a was I was turning over a stone for myself. That once I finished that image, I never went back to. I just got busy doing other stuff. I wound up moving to Las Vegas, and I did tons of freelance work for years that was always much more much too fast paced to be able to create another piece like that. But then shortly before, while I was still in Vegas and things were kind of things had sort of settled down a little bit, and I was kind of I hadn't taken this job here in Arkansas yet, but that things in my life were sort of setting themselves up to make that be possible. And I had assembled the I had the book was coming out, and I don't know if I was necessarily motivated by the book coming out in a book release phase, but somewhere in there I made the Sonoran Sandman, and I sat down with the intention of going back to the Green Man idea and sort of evolving that as much as I could. So I, by that point, I had lived in Vegas for a few years. I'd become utterly obsessed with cactuses, which is a probably ridiculous thing to say or hear, but I totally unlocked an interest in that world, living in the desert. And so I really felt the impulse to kind of have that be reflected in the imagery I was making, and I just wanted to sort of there was just something about all that I wanted to meditate on artistically. And yeah, so I actually conceived of a whole series of these kind of characters, I guess you could say, only one of which I've actually completed, which is the Sonoran Sandman. But there's a couple others that are unfinished. They've just been hanging around for a few years, which I do intend to go back to and complete. But yeah, they were intended to be modern interpretations or riffing on the concept of the Green Man, fused with my own interest in cactuses and trying to create a digital composite that felt somehow different than all the other stuff I'd done, and also felt like I was not what am I trying to say? I felt like I was trying to make a painting without resorting to digital tricks. And only using photographic texture, but still trying to achieve a painterly feel to it. If that makes sense.
No, yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I was curious why, because I live in Phoenix, and so I see cacti all the time, and there's definitely something like really appealing about them, but I can't really figure out what. Like, what was the appeal for you?
Well, I guess I'm obsessed with them from a sculptural sense. I'm fascinated with the way they grow. Certain species like just are completely unpredictable, and are reacting to the environment that they're in and that kind of thing. But I don't know. I think that the fundamentally my interest in them is very what am I trying to say? It's very primal. I feel like it touches something deep within me, and I don't really know what that is. I mean, my family's English. My grandfather had the the most photographic English garden you could possibly imagine, and my uncles and my mom certainly have followed in his footsteps to one degree or another. So I think culturally, that the green thumb is
like
it's part of
it's
folks'
inherited.
hardcore identity, but
Yeah.
that's something that never ever meant anything to me until I moved to the desert, which is so interesting. But I also think that just the cactuses themselves are useful symbolically. I think they're for me they're a shorthand when discussing the Southwest or Mexico,
Sure.
and they I don't know. I think you know. I love all those textures. I love the way, you saw in the video. I sat down with I started that image with a photographic model, basically a person who in a position I wanted to sort of use as a basis. But each muscular representation is just an, pardon me, another cactus form, taken from a different kind of a plant or something. I just think that's so, it's just such a the plants themselves are so gestural, and I'm like I just am, I'm just endlessly entertained by that. And
What's your favorite?
my favorite is something called a Myrtillo cactus, MYR TILLO, Myrtillo cactus, which is I think it's actually not a natural cactus. I think it's a cultivar or a hybrid or something that's man-made, but it's really incredibly beautiful. There's a couple of different versions of it. There's one that's kind of smaller than one that's a much bigger plant, but they look like they're candles melting upwards. And they branch out, to me, they're just like one of the most exquisitely beautiful things in nature, even if it is manipulated by human beings to a degree. That the they are, yeah, they're just I'm mesmerized by them, but at the same time, I love all cactuses. I love other plants too, but cactuses for some reason have always have for the last 10 years or so just really captured my imagination, and something that I've also personally just felt a fun sense of challenge to try and grow them successfully, especially living here in Arkansas. It's not easy, but
Yeah, do you have to like really have, I'm assuming you have to have like a super kind of modified environment in order to like make that work in Arkansas, yeah? Like for
yeah,
cactus.
I mean, the number one problem is there's just not enough sun, and we live in a forest, so there's just like what sun there is just
It's obscured, yeah.
we're just in the shade all the time, and then it rains a lot, and then in the winter it freezes, so those things are all not certainly not helpful when it comes to trying to do this. But yeah, I move them around a lot. I move them indoors for the winter. I put them under grow lights sometimes, but it's generally just I don't know, it sounds silly, but it's like staying aware of their health sort of all the time, and probably in an unnecessarily obsessive way, but that's the only way to keep them alive. If you let your guard down for a day, you may lose them all, and I have in the past, so I know I'm particularly attentive to them.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because yeah, it seems like it would take a lot of work, and like my partner is very into gardening, and there seems to be like kind of a personal relationship that's like formed where like if something like dies off, like it's kind of like it's a bummer.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like losing a pet or a family member, but it's a huge disappointment. And I'm aware that even even just a dialogue in my mind as I'm watering my plants, like so many of them represent something to me. They represent a place that they were acquired or someone I was with, or the person that gave it to me. You know what I mean? And like they become sort of like a living photo album in a way, like the same way my record collection is. And that might be more, that might say more about me than it does about anyone else. But I'm just, yeah, I do. I feel, I try to avoid losing any to avoid that.
No, that's interesting to see the comparison, because I'd imagine there's a lot of the same, like, you attach really strong memories to like this record and when you bought
Absolutely,
it,
yeah.
and the fact that it was like even just like front facing, just like on the floor or something, because you would just listen to it after you have this traumatic phone call or whatever the fuck. Yeah, that's interesting. Is there anything about the creative process or the world or anything at all that you would like to get off your chest in closing?
Oh, wow. Well, the
I'm sorry that I
world,
stumped you with such a broad question, by the
that's
way. Like, that was
okay.
kind of a
The
dick move
world
now
is,
that I'm thinking about it.
no worries. I am as constantly frustrated and disappointed in the nature of what's going on in the world, in our world and society every day as probably many other people are. But I do feel as though the most useful response to that, to any kind of negativity, to any feelings of negativity or despair or even hostility to a degree. I think all those things can be changed. I think being creative, making art, responding creatively is the most eloquent thing that anybody can do. I think it's the most meaningful response to something that most people largely have no control over, and to feeling helpless or invisible or marginalized. I don't think there's anything more useful as a response than the creative impulse and the ability to take up tools and create something for yourself or for the to create a bigger dialogue or to set an example or whatever. I just think resisting despair and resisting the impulse to self-harm or self-destruct or do anything to pacify yourself is those mechanisms are put there by a bigger power structure that doesn't see the point in life.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, I mean, for me, part of the struggle, part of the reason for existence is to defy that structure and find joy in life despite that. And not that there's necessarily anything supernatural behind it, but certainly I feel like if you could stand back and look at the whole of human existence and ask what the purpose is, like for me, defying overcoming the structure of oppression in every possible way, micro and macro, is the point of life. I think the struggle is the point.
Well, that was beautiful. I that genuinely was very nice to hear. Thank you for sharing that.
Huh. Thank you for saying so.
You
Appreciate
did really well considering, like, I just kind of like hit you with a what's the meaning of life question. Like, you rolled with that pretty good, so thank you.
My pleasure. Helps being old.
thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure, Jason. I appreciate it very much, man. Thank you.
Hello, listener. You are currently being hypnotized. You will donate to this podcast at venmo.com/thecreativecurmudgeon. Thank you for your time. So long.